whereas 94% of price power, so salience only makes up 6% of price power, 94% of it, so nearly all of it, comes from other stuff being meaningfully different.
Hey everyone, in this episode we're talking with Dom Boyd from Kantar. They've done some really fascinating research on brand differentiation and how it can be a huge lever for pricing power and profitability. So buckle up and let's talk branding. This episode is sponsored by Creative Business Company, but more on that later.
I'm Dom. I'm Managing Director in UK Insight here at Kantar, and I also head up the marketing effectiveness practice. Kantar it includes our Brand Z database, which evaluates and benchmarks the value of brands worldwide. Prior to Kantar, I worked in creative agencies such as Adam and Eve DDB and Publicis and AMV BBDO at the front line of building brands. So some brands are something that I absolutely love.
Interesting. And of course, there is Brand Z, which is kind of like Kantar's evaluation or benchmarking tool for brands. Could you quickly elaborate on that?
Yeah, sure. It's Brand Z is, in some ways, the sort of a jewel and a crown. Certainly, that's the way that our clients describe it, and that it's our engine that sort of benchmarks brand performance in terms of how brands are built in terms of their brand power. It's made up of three components: meaningfulness, differentiation, and salience. We can get into that more later. All of that equals brand power. We calibrate that with financial performance, and then we sort of look at what brands are. That allows us the ability to look at what brands are outperforming and which brands are underperforming, and in particular, why.
One of the biggest challenges in my own career has always been to convince business leaders that brand is one of the most important assets in their company. And even though dozens of studies have shown that getting the right strategic positioning can get you a 5x performance on your ads, sometimes convincing executives to prioritize their brand strategy can be challenging. That's why this episode is sponsored by Creative Business Company, a strategic consultancy on a mission to make brand more accountable and more effective. They take the lessons they've learned from over a decade of experience of working with brands such as Morningstar, Shell, and Formula E, and adapt them to smaller, fast-growing companies to help them get more attention, convert leads, and drive sales. So if you're trying to get budget for brand, create messaging that converts, or lower your cost of acquisition, check out creativebusinesscompany.com for ideas, evidence, and tools that will help you make an impact. We talked a little bit about this before the podcast, but one of the articles you wrote recently on like why brand difference matters was very interesting to me for a couple of reasons. But maybe like before we dive into that a bit deeper, can you explain what you mean by difference? Because we all have our own, you know, little interpretations and definitions of this thing.
Yeah, so look, I'm going to stick to the definition that Kantar uses as opposed to my own personal interpretation, if you like, which is about being seen as unique and leading the way. That's the Kantar methodological definition, if you like. So it's a combination of those things. And so it's not just about what new product makes a product difference at all. It's about perception of overall difference, and it's about combining that with the idea of being seen to lead the way. So for me, what I've loved about sort of the work I've had the opportunity of doing, really, which we sort of presented at Cannes last year, for example, with Side Business School, is the last few years of COVID and then inflation have really just been a beautiful, huge experimental testbed of how brands actually build commercial advantage for business. And I think that they've thrown up a couple of surprises, if you like, in that, guess what? It turns out that penetration is really important, and that salience is, and sales are really important too. But guess what? That's not that's only half the story. For brands that have, and businesses that have really won, are for brands that have combined a way of maintaining their sales with building their price power or their margin. And that's been so important in inflationary times. And if you've not been able to do that, you've struggled. That's what we've seen in all kinds of business. And if you have been able to do that, then it turns out your business has outperformed. So some great examples, sort of Cadbury's or Coke or Diageo and Guinness. And I can talk a bit more about some of those. And the secret to their success is just that they've been able to combine a way of maintaining or growing their sales. But the bit that's made the difference is how to ensure that their pricing has a sort of outperformed the market, if you like. And the reason for that is that pricing feeds straight into the bottom line, straight into EBITDA. Because, you know, as some of the McKinsey analysis shows, every 1% increase in price drives 8% increase in EBITDA, which is three times the amount of the equivalent of a 1% increase in sales. So you need both of these things. It's not either or. The analysis that we've done, both in terms of interrogating Brand Z and working with Oxford Side, basically shows that what makes up, it shows a couple of things. One of them is that price power is built differently from demand power or sales. So demand for 80% of demand power comes from salience and being meaningful, so meeting needs relevantly. Whereas 94% of price power, so salience only makes up 6% of price power. 94% of it, so nearly all of it, comes from other stuff, being meaningfully different. And so difference becomes twice as, what we see is difference is more than twice as important in driving that price power. And the bit of analysis that we did was looking at, it came at it from a slightly different angle, actually. It was originally looking at what we call breakthrough brands. What are the brands that have grown the fastest? And what can we learn from those? Because brands are not all created equal. And what it shows is the brands that also grow the fastest, and this includes, firstly, the surprise, we looked at the Brand Z database of hundreds of brands and interrogated it. And what it shows is, firstly, the fastest growing brands can be big or they can be small, and they're from a range of categories. So it's not just small brands growing bigger. Secondly, it shows that the fastest growing brands are hardwired more for difference. So they over-index for difference and they under-index for saliency. Now, all of these things are important. They're all part of our model, meaningful different saliency. But actually, if you really shine the spotlight on what matters most, difference makes the difference. And, some people think that the difference versus distinctiveness debate is a little bit dry, a little bit academic. I don't see it as dry and academic at all. I see it as foundational and fundamental and really exciting, because it focuses us harder on the stuff that matters most. And, I would sort of say there's a danger. Erin Bogbas have done brilliant work. Byron's done brilliant work and helped the industry. But there is a danger that, our work sort of highlights that there's a danger of being a little bit mechanical. The magic of brands, the magic of what creates differentiation is the magic. It's the magic dust of emotion, not just distinctive brand assets. And that magic is so important to apply in practice. And that's where things get exciting, because that requires creativity and originality, as well as just the sort of foundational stuff that drives penetration and distinctive brand assets. So you need magic as well as the mechanics.
Interesting. Yeah, there's so much stuff to dive in, but maybe first, I am curious a bit more if you have more like insight into this relation between, so salience matters a lot in terms of like when people are buying, but it matters a lot less when it comes to buying at a higher price. I guess that's fair to say, right? But what is like the mechanic behind why differentiation matters so much when it comes to pricing power?
Yeah, so we've looked under the covers to try and see the relationship between what the foundations of what makes differentiation matter. So 30% of difference we think comes from things like distinctive brand assets, so colors, fonts, those kind of things, characters. The other 70% comes from sensory stuff. It comes from more experiential, emotional things, like so, which includes price and positioning, experience, design, creativity, long-term campaigns, which may or may not include distinctive brand assets. I think for me, all of that on a gestalt level, if you go back to psychological foundations, it just creates a sense of betterness. Or, to put it more simply, it creates a sense of quality. And that's an emotional thing. And it ultimately, that sense of quality is what plays out in market in terms of, a sense of rightness at the point of the moments of truth, at the point of purchase, whether that's online or offline. And it makes you feel more comfortable about, or even positive about paying more for the same thing, which is what I would call a pure, surely what brands are all about, you know, creating a sense of something better than just a pure commodity.
Yeah.
You know, Apple's a great example. It's a top of the pops, if you like, in brand Z for a couple of years. And it's got very strong meaningfulness and saliency, but it's got even stronger differentiation. And that's a mature brand now. It's no longer a small challenger brand. And it's just done a very good job at continuously being different enough relative to competitors that it's topped up that difference. And that gives it a sense. That's why people are happy to pay a real premium for it. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah. I saw some of the brands like mentioned, like Cadbury and Apple in these breakthrough brands. And of course, there's also smaller brands in that list. But I'm curious, like in terms of when we say difference, like what kind of differentiation works and what doesn't? To give you just an example, like in a lot of categories, tech categories, it's like differentiation in terms of being very innovative with your features and, like, you know, the race between AI, LLM models getting faster. It seems like it's a race to the bottom because, you know, at one minute you're different and the next minute somebody's catching up. Like, what kind of differentiation can you build that lasts and gives you that pricing power?
Yeah, look, I want to be really clear. Differentiation isn't just about innovating faster. Right, because otherwise it is just that race to the bottom, and Byron's right in that sort of it's hard to continuously out innovate, certainly on incremental level. Unless you create a new category or a new market or a subcategory within a market, it's harder to do that. So, differentiation is an emotional. This is the thing. Differentiation is the gestalt. It's the sum of emotional things that all tie together to create that sense of betterness, that sense of quality, that sense of relative to competitors being a little bit different. Doesn't have to be a lot. Just enough to trigger a positive buying experience. So it's all about being meaningfully, in Kantar's language, meaningfully different is about the combination of being meaningfully different to more people, basically. And meaningfulness is about meeting needs and user occasions relevantly, both on a rational level and an emotional level. So a good example of a brand that's done this, and they were speaking at our event yesterday, actually, called Ignite, is Guinness. Which was also Marketing Week's Brand of the Year last year. I think it's an interesting example. It's just become the UK's number one pint. It's had a sales uplift of 19% in Europe. It's a very old brand, right? So this is not a young startup we're talking about. It's a brand that has arguably got the hardest job in the world. You know, it's an old, well-known brand that could easily be toppled off its perch. How has it succeeded? I think it's a masterclass in how to be more meaningfully different to more people. And so it's essentially done a couple of simple things. Yes, it is used for role of innovation. So we work hard with Guinness to help them on that journey. So we've launched with them Nitro Surge and Zero, which is sort of a Guinness in a can, if you like. So for a better in-home experience, so the off-trade is really important for them, and nitros and 0%, which is alcohol-free Guinness. And that's an increasing usage occasion in the marketplace. So innovation has played its role. Category entry points have played their role. So Guinness have worked really hard through things like the Six Nations and their advertising to focus on more occasions more often, right? Through summer, through winter, and to provide platforms to bring that to life. And their creativity is consistently different, right? It's really emotional. It uses all the brand cues and codes or distinctive brand assets, but it does so emotionally. And it does it with humor and a lightness of touch and with creative excellence. So it oozes creative quality so that it consistently shows up in a way that's consistently a little bit different and always purely Guinness. It couldn't be for anyone else. So everything you see from Guinness, it couldn't be for anyone else. And they've also invested in their overall experience. So in what they call the perfect pint, if you like, so the pour experience. And they do this over the long term. So it's all of these things combined. It's not one thing. It's not just, it's not just about, you know, Guinness has always had famous advertising. For me, what's interesting is, you know, it's a great example of how to drive commercial success through, sure, employing great advertising, but actually it's about leveraging great marketing to build a great brand. And that's so much more than advertising. And all of these things add up to being a little bit more different, a little bit more often from competitors. And that's how it's become the UK's number one pint. And but most of all, it makes it look easy, and it's not. Right. And that's the thing. So I think that's an example of a brand that's getting it really right at the moment. But it's very focused. It's not trying to be different for the sake of being different. It's not doing wild, crazy, wacky stuff. You know, it's being itself in every possible way, in every possible moment on a purchase an experience journey, and it makes people feel good about ordering a Guinness and doing so in front of other people and doing it when they're at home, and that's what's driven their success.
Yeah, and I like that point about, you know, we tend to maybe over focus when it comes to Guinness or some of these brands that have like super strong distinctive assets. Like, look, they've done this creative play on their assets and this is the key to their success. Well, it's definitely contributing, but there's so much more going on behind why this brand can stay successful over the long run. And I think
I think this is the other thing, right? It's not just, look, I've come from a world of communications and creativity, right? I love the power of comms and advertising. I think it's great. It's a really powerful lever. But brands are built by so much more than advertising. And marketing effectiveness needs to recognize that. And innovation does have a role. Experience does have a role. Price power does have a role. And these are things that have just been underlooked, I think, by, in more recent literature and research. And I think it's just about balancing it. It's not to sort of say, so I'm absolutely with Mark Ritson on this. It's about bothism. It's not to sort of say all that other stuff is throwing it out of the window. And it's, you know, all Kantar's work shows it is about penetration. It is about being sort of a salience or mental availability. And it is about being, you know, mental availability sort of in sales. But actually, we also believe it's much more than that. It's about this other stuff, the role that experience and innovation and price power can also bring. And that really feeds through to the bottom line. So if you really want, you know, and we see that, as I say, like COVID and the inflation environment have provided a testbed. They've sorted the wheat from the chaff. And if you've only been trying to drive sales, I suspect there's a generation of marketers that are no longer in their jobs as a result, because because that's not been enough to win in the market, and ultimately it sort of revealed the true power of brands, you know. Yeah. And brand is more than just about driving sales in the short and long term. It's that's just part of the equation.
I'm also curious, like, obviously we mentioned this economical context of inflation and like there is a lot of fear around people and purchasing power, and I'm guessing a lot of brands also can play the opposite cart, which is basically lowering prices as much as they can to, you know, meet the volumes. And I don't know if you have any take on that direction and what it means in this whole context.
Yeah, hey, that's a incisive question. Let me take the example of retail. So firstly, all our analysis, including what we've done, you know, sort of we had worked with Les Binet on our last Ignite session, you know, it shows that price power, and all our world data, the world panel data, shows that promotions are important, but you can't be a slave to promotions. So the number one thing is avoid discounting into oblivion, right? Because it is the road to oblivion and undermining your brand. So discounting is not the answer. I think your question is a slightly different one, though, because it's about using price as a strategic lever, like your pricing point. So where that can be a powerful advantage, especially in inflationary environments, where it is your brand is positioned around value and positioned around pricing as a value mechanic, if you like. So in the UK, Greggs the Baker, it serves pastries like Cornish pasties and pizza, anything that's sort of pastry based. It's a retailer. It's had a very strong value. It's got a very strong value proposition, and it is absolutely grown like a steam train in the UK. If you look at its share price, if you look at its brand Z growth, and if you look at its overall sales, it's a business that is growing great guns because it's doubled down on its value proposition in a competitive market. But it's relevant for Greggs.
I created this podcast to help myself and others understand the power of brand building without all of the BS. So here's three no BS guides from my friends at Creative Business Company that you can download for free to drive impact. The Brand Investment Blueprint outlines the exact process they use to convince skeptical executives to invest in brand building projects and campaigns. How challengers can position for growth explains how brands can find and leverage their hidden advantage to create brand marketing that sells. And last, my favorite, How to Build a Big Brand on a Small Budget explores how to outsmart and overtake market leaders with more cost-effective marketing. Go to creativebusinesscompany.com/staff to download your free guides today. That's creativebusinesscompany.com/STEF to download your free guides today. Back to the podcast.
So use pricing, but use it strategically and carefully.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I've just been watching for a new car with my wife, and we went to Tesla and we got this the price for Model Y, and we were like, what? Is it that cheap? And all of a sudden, like, I was talking about this with my wife, you see Teslas driving everywhere, and like, the feeling of it completely changed. On the one hand, you're like, wow, because my previous perception was still like that it was quite pricey, but now I know it's already different. So in a way, it's very interesting to see how that will evolve for them, because they were definitely, I think they had pricing power. I don't know where they're going with it, but
well, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, ultimately, pricing is pricing wrongly or discounting unnecessarily is the fastest route to commoditization, and commoditization is the fastest route to underperformance or to bankruptcy. Being blunt about it, because in a world where, and unless you can outcompete against other commodities, and you've got financial muscle to do that on a sustained level, and you know that, and you're using that as a strategic approach in your business model, then you're just going to run. It's like you're going to be like a plane that's running out of fuel.
Yeah,
you know.
You can see it also in the economic climate and even investment space, like the way we're talking now about growth, profitability plays a lot more role in this, and so the role for brand in that, I think, is huge and an opportunity for all of us that believe in this. Definitely very interesting takes on pricing power and differentiation. Maybe one thing the listeners are also very interested in is a bit more when it comes to like finding the right channels to, you know, get new customers through the door. And especially I think for smaller brands, I think that is the big challenge that a lot of marketers and most marketers are suffering, is like, without spending a million on TV or Super Bowl ads, how can we become this you know, leading brand? How can we grow faster in a profitable way? Like, do you have any takes on channels or tactics that are working well in that area?
Yeah, thanks, Steph. It is so absolutely. So if we go back to the beginning, you know, our analysis of breakthrough brands sort of shows that how important difference is, and that a breakthrough brand, the fastest growing brands in the world, over-index on difference. And so you need to do that in a way that is meaningfully different, but you want to double down the difference. So we did some analysis with our cross-media database to look at, okay, what are the channels that are most important? And we did this analysis over a couple of years. And what it highlights is a bit of a surprise. So we presented this at the IPA F-Works conference last year. And what it highlights is that digital share of spend, digital channels over-index in terms of their ability to drive difference. So their share of impact of digital channels like YouTube or TikTok or Meta, is significantly above their share of spend. Whereas offline channels, like TV, out of home, radio, for example, they've got a much greater share of saliency. Hmm. So what it highlights is, if you're a smaller brand, what that highlights is that you want to be focusing on the channels that most make the difference. One of the things you could do is make sure that you have your fair share, or perhaps even over-index on those channels that most drive your sense of difference in the marketplace, and that digital channels allow you the ability to do that. It's not sort of saying don't do other stuff, because I think once you get to a certain kind of scale, you absolutely need to complement those digital channels with other channels. And that will vary by brand and its relative place in the marketplace. But that bit of analysis highlights that perhaps digital is your secret weapon when it comes to building price power. So if you're a smaller brand, it's something that can, it's a turbocharger. You know, it would make a lot of sense to start in those channels for a strategic reason. There are also tactical reasons in that you can be quite agile. As long as you put in the right, you do the right kind of creative work, brand building creative work, not just performance marketing, and you analyze that in the right way or evaluate it in the right way. So that means not just clicks, likes, engagement metrics, but also brand-based metrics. That gives you a very strong platform for building out your brand and for growing it and for potentially for scaling it, especially once you then combine that with offline channels. That was a really interesting bit of analysis for us. It comes with a watch out though. Humor and emotion are the two biggest weapons in the creative arsenal. Digital, what we see from our Link database, it's the largest creative database in the world. What we see is that digital channels, are not benching at the same levels that they should be, both for humor and for emotion. And for overall, as a separate piece, emotion has been declining over time for all campaigns, which is a real missed opportunity. So it comes back to what we were talking about before, the stuff that you know, brands are magic. They're made of magic, not just mechanics. And the magic comes from branded emotion, and humor is something that should be one way, one really important way of building that feel good factor, building that magic. So I think the watch out is just, if you're going to use digital channels, don't just use it for performance, and do perhaps double down, work doubly as hard to ensure that your brand is coming across in a way that creates that feel good factor and uses the emotional creative tools in the box, not not just for mechanical ones. And don't get sucked into the, you know, the vortex of engagement rates, because that's absolutely not enough. You need to complement those with evaluating it with brand metrics as well, to make sure you're building your, you know, sort of your digital is building the right kind of brand impressions, just as you would with an offline campaign. So yeah, don't think that digital is you can get away with it, because you might as well just put your money down the drain.
Love that. Dom, you talked a bit about these channels and indeed performance-based metrics. What are some of the ways that we can start to measure this difference as a brand?
Yeah, look, I think this is a really exciting for us. I think this is a golden age to be doing the kind of job that we do, and a golden age to be having the opportunity to measure the effectiveness of brands and their impact. And because technology allows us to evaluate things much more cheaply, much more quickly than with much more rigor than we've ever been able to do before. So I think some easy things that we see brands getting wrong are not measure, especially in digital, it's just not measuring stuff at all. Not doing pre-testing, for example, on the content, because in the old world it used to take, you know, weeks or months to do that, whereas now it takes minutes. You can evaluate, you know, thousands of bits of copy in minutes in all kinds of different formats and benchmark it, and there's really no excuse for not doing that and ensuring it systematically that you're putting in place the right kind of insight to guide evaluation of your campaigns in a holistic sense, right across channels, including digital, which is an increasing bit of a mix. What we see is, it can now be done really cheaply and quickly, as I say, and incorporate brand and emotional metrics as well as some of the other stuff. So I would urge, what we see is when the people that do that are more than twice as likely to have top performing creative quality or top performing creative work, right? So, and it's sort of mad not to do it. Otherwise, it's like flying a plane at night through the snow without any instruments, you know, in the fog. It just becomes, it doesn't make landing, you know, mean you can't land the plane, but it makes it a darn sight more difficult. So I would, you know, I think a really easy, simple win is ensure you've put in place the right kind of effectiveness bedrock in terms of the systems and, and metric currencies across different assets in a campaign to allow you to ensure that it's meeting its brand objectives, whatever the channel and whatever role it plays within a campaign ecosystem. And then make sure that you've got, you know, you've put in place evaluation systems at the far end. You know, an easy win is econometrics. The same applies to that. So new technologies allow you to evaluate the commercial impact in a much more holistic way, more easily than you've ever been able to do. And so there's really no excuses for people not to do this stuff at this point. It's much. It can just de-risk. Well, there's two things. It de-risks what you're doing, but it also means that you can get more ROI by spending less. It makes a lot of sense because you're getting more bang for every buck that you spend, both in the short term in terms of your performance and sales, but also then in that medium and longer term. So, and when you build, we all know when you build your brand, it's like, brands are built, well, it's like compound creativity. It works in an additive way. The more you get it right, the more value it brings, and it adds up. And that's what makes you competitively, well, creates a huge competitive advantage and the price power that we talked about.
Great. I think that's a perfect way to end the show. Thank you so much, Dom, for coming on.
It's been an absolute joy and pleasure to chat.
All right, that was it for this episode. As always, if you want to stay up to date on the latest episodes, check out the show notes and find out more interesting stuff about brand strategy and brand building, visit letstalkbranding.substack.com. That's letstalkbranding.substack.com.